Well, the reason is that we took the continuum limit. So the original problem was formulated on with a sort of discrete set of atoms. But then we introduced these interpolating functions. And I claim that this is the reason for getting an infinity here. How to understand this? Well, by uncertainty principle, the momentum should not be larger than, so you see this phonons, they're waves propagating through this chain of atoms. So of course, these atoms are separated by a certain position, which is for the ray. So we cannot possibly measure the position of say wave packet moving through this array of atoms with an accuracy better than A. So there is an uncertainty in measuring the position, and therefore, by uncertainty principle, the momentum of the phonon is bounded from above by h divided by a. So there is, in fact, in this integral, there should be a cutoff of the order of h divided by a. So it is then finite but very big. So again, to understand this in a mathematically precise way, we should have returned to the original problem written over there, where the system was discrete. And then we could have done, all the steps, but considering x as a discrete variable. And then instead of integrals will have sums. Fourier transform will become again a sum. So if you have a lattice system, then the dual momentum, the Fourier momentum, is periodic, right? So if you have periodic interval, the momentum variable in the Fourier transform is discrete. If you have a discrete variable in Fourier transform, the momentum variable will be periodic, okay? So in practice, the momentum of phonons, of lattice waves, they are periodic with momentum 2 pi h power over a. So the momentum is confined to a single Brillouin zone. If we would have done all the steps without taking the continuum limit, then the true dispersion relation for phonons would let me write it down explicitly. So it will have this form that contains a sign. So this is a result of the calculation that I don't want to reproduce even in without any details. So anyway, so this is the answer that you would get for a finite discrete array of atoms. Yes?
Sorry, I'm trying to work out the relationship between the limit on our precision in the measurement of the position of an atom and the maximum value of the momentum. One thing I'm used to seeing, so if we look at the inequality, if we multiply both sides by A, we have position times momentum is less than or about equal to h bar. I believe that we used to seeing the inequality go the other way, or we're just not thinking about this in the right way.
Yes, that's right. Let me see. Perhaps this was a bad explanation. Let me think about it. Sort of a more precise way to understand this is just to redo the calculation for the chain where we treat the atoms as discrete points. Then what you get is this formula, where momentum now runs between minus pH bar divided by A and pH bar divided by A. And that is periodic in P with this period, this order of this period. So, if you draw this dispersion curve, so if you draw the dispersion curve, then it starts linearly. It starts linearly at small momenta. So this is the dispersion that we got by approximating by doing the continuum limit. The true dispersion relation is actually smaller, so it has the same slope at zero, but then it has this sinusoidal shape, so it's it must be periodic in P, so this point is actually identified with that point. Here, of course, the integral would be converged, right? So we can, first of all, we integrate on a finite interval, and then we integrate actually a different expression. So our approximation is valid only for sufficiently small momentum. This is the reason why we got this divergence. So then the vacuum energy, in practice, we can write down the exact expression. So what you see is that here A appears in the numerator in the second power. So in this formula, obviously A cannot be taken to infinity, to zero. However, we could have, apart from the numerical coefficient, we could have guessed this formula without going back to the picture where the system is discretized. Because we know that this integral should be cut off at this scale. It diverges quadratically, so the expression should be proportional to Cs divided by square a squared and then h bar. And well, the only thing that we couldn't have gotten by this simple way of reasoning is this numerical coefficient. And even the numerical coefficient can be, well, not in this formula, but in some more physically interesting expressions, it can be recovered by imposing a set of simple physical requirements. So let me talk about that a little bit. What I'll talk about doesn't have anything to do with field theory, it illustrates the sort of ideas that underlie the approximations that are done in field theory when we are dealing with infinities. So the theory that I'll talk about is called Debye theory. And it describes the behavior of, real crystals at sufficiently low temperatures with reasonable approximation. So, so in a real crystal, of course, we will have what will change is actually there will be very little changes, right? So we don't even need to understand the details of the crystal structure to understand that there will be phonons in the crystal. Now, whatever this crystal structure is, the result of these steps will be the wave equation, right? Because the wave equation can be derived just from elasticity theory. It doesn't require knowing the details of the microscopic structure. So we know that there'll be acoustic waves propagating in any crystal. Now, unlike this one-dimensional situation, they will have three polarizations, because the displacement vector has three components. And this is enough to understand how the crystal vibrations will behave at low energies, right? Because the wave equation is the same, therefore we quantize it in the same way. So in some approximation, the crystal can be understood as a thermal bath of phonons, which allows to compute, say, the heat capacity of a crystalline solid, because we know that the total energy of the thermal bath of phonons will obey the the Planck distribution. Then we can do this integral, And so the internal energy of crystal vibrations then is given by the Stefan-Boltzmann formula. The important point here is the dependence on temperature. So the energy is proportional to the fourth power of temperature. So the heat capacity, which is the derivative of energy with respect to temperature, will grow with the cube of temperature. Now, can this be true for all temperatures? What do you think? Would it be a good approximation for what range of temperatures this would be a good approximation? Sorry?
High temperatures.
At high temperatures. In fact, this is actually a good approximation at low temperatures. Now, at high temperatures, we can also guess the answer, what would be the capacity. Yes, so this would be a good approximation at low temperatures. Now, at high temperatures, indeed we can sort of imagine that atoms don't talk to each other, so the temperature, the thermal fluctuations are so strong that they are overwhelm any potential energy involved in the atomic interactions. So then the heat capacity should obey the usual, the law that the heat capacity is equal to the Boltzmann constant times the total number of degrees of freedom in the system. So each atom has 3 degrees of freedom, and there are n atoms. And so at the high temperatures, the heat capacity should approach this constant. So at low temperatures, the heat capacity is cubic. But this cannot continue. This curve cannot continue indefinitely. So it should somehow turn and approach a constant. Now what Debye did is he constructed a model that describes all of this curve for any temperatures using some reasonable approximations. Actually, not using reasonable approximations, but using some physical reasoning that allows to describe this curve with a minimal number of parameters. So the idea of Debye was the following. So in this, at low temperatures, we have phonons well, now they live in the three-dimensional momentum space, px, py, pz. We know that at behave as particles with this dispersion relation. So this is definitely true at momenta much smaller than h bar divided by Lucas spacing. So for momenta that are bigger than that, or of the same order of magnitude that h divided by a, phonons behave differently. So their dispersion becomes somewhat different. So they, first of all, the momentum should be periodic, so it belongs to some Brillouin zone. And the energy is not really linear, but it's it curves down in certain way. So this means that when we quantize phonons, so here we will have equally spaced levels, and here the density of states will be a little bit different. So the density of states for phonons will, we have an okay approximation for it at small momenta, but then when momenta become sufficiently large, well, then this curve will really depend on the crystal structure of the solid, what kind of atoms it has, what kind of crystal lattice it has, et cetera, et cetera. So certainly this will be very, very dependent on the details. But the idea of Debye was to introduce a very simple phenomenological model that takes into account, basic physical principles and our knowledge of physics at small momentum, which is universal, which is the same for all crystals. So he said that let's say that inside a ball of radius lambda, let's say, lambda divided by Cs. So that inside we have usual phonons with this dispersion relation, and outside there are no levels at all. So we just neglect everything that doesn't behave universally. This means that we assume that phonons can have energy smaller than lambda. So in this sense, we introduce a cutoff on our energy scale. And then there is nothing outside, which is, of course, a very crude approximation. Certainly, photons, the Brillouin zone is not a sphere. The dispersion curve of a real phonon starts to deviate from this linear universal law much earlier than at the boundary of the Brillouin zone, et cetera, et cetera. But to the first approximation, we neglect all these details. The only thing that we need to understand is what is this lambda. Well, we know this, that lambda divided by Cs should be of order of h bar divided by a. But typically, we don't know what is a, and besides, there is one physical principle that we would like to preserve, right? We want to we want to have the same number of degrees of freedom in our system we want that the number of degrees of freedom in this approximate phenomenological description is the same as in the real crystal that we want to study. So we assume that the number of degrees of freedom is the same. And so the total number of degrees of freedom is what? Is 3n? Yes.
When you say it's the same, do you mean the same in the low on time
limits or regime? Oh, literally the same. So we assume this very simple model of phonons of excitations in the solid. We say that they all sit in this ball of radius lambda divided by Cs. And there, the particles satisfy this dispersion relation. That's it. Outside, there is nothing. So on the other hand, we know that the total number of degrees of freedom is 3 times n, because we have three. We have n atoms, each can move in three directions.
When we say the number of degrees of freedom is the same, it seems like we're comparing two situations, and in each of the situations, in the two situations, the number of degrees of freedom is the same. So I'm just asking,
yes,
are those two situations the low momentum regime and high momentum regime, or what are those two?
Oh, so we are comparing our very crude model to the real physical system. So in the real physical system, the total number of degrees of freedom is 3. We are trying to describe this system in a very, very simple way. So we say that we use low energy approximation for phonons beyond, in principle, beyond the regime where it is valid. And then we introduce a sharp cutoff on their momentum instead of thinking of how the Brillouin zone really looks like. So then we need to compute the number of degrees of freedom in this model. So as you know, in each cell in the phase space, there is 1 degree of freedom. And so we should multiply, the volume of the real space times the volume of momentum space times 3 polarizations of each phonon. And this will count all degrees of freedom. So if we compute this volume, we find that this is equal to the right hand side is equal to V times lambda cubed divided by 2 pi squared h bar cubed Cs squared. From which we can find lambda. So usually, K Boltzmann times lambda, lambda divided by the Boltzmann constant is called the, and sometimes this is denoted by theta d, and this is called the Debye temperature. This is few hundred kelvins. So usually what people do is that they introduce this as a phenomenological parameter. So it is a little bit, so you see that in this particular way of thinking, it depends just on the density of the crystal. But for real crystals, one just parameterizes this by one phenomenological parameter, which is reasonably well agrees with this estimate, but typically one introduces this Debye temperature, which is different for different solids. Anyway, so then one can calculate the energy of a crystal. This would be equal to integral over energies up to the cutoff of the Planck distribution. So this integral cannot be calculated in elementary functions, and usually one introduces the special notation for it. So this is called the Debye function. If I write here, can everyone? I think everyone should be able to see. Yes.
So in the expression there, 3n equals to 3v integral. So that should be replaced by cs cube in the denominator, not cs squared, because there is a cube there.
Here?
No, no, in the previous one. Yeah. Okay. So we, that's v lambda cube by 2 pi square h bar cube cs cube, right? Because
you have
three integrals and you take yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry, where's the correction?
There was a square here which was wrong. Thanks. It should be cube. So the Debye function is defined as an integral. So this is 3 by x cubed integral from 0 to x. Dz z cubed e to the z minus 1. And then the heat capacity is equal to 3n k Boltzmann times d of x minus x d prime of x at x equal to lambda divided by k Boltzmann times t. And so this is approximately equal to 12 pi 4 n k Boltzmann to the 4 t cube divided by 5 lambda cube at k Boltzmann t much larger than lambda, or just 3n k Boltzmann at k Boltzmann t much smaller. It's the other way around. So this should be at small temperatures, and this is at big temperatures. So indeed, if you draw this curve, I think I did it in the notes using Mathematica. So it has precisely this shape. So it starts off as cubic curve at small temperatures. So when we know that phonons are good approximation, but then it flattens and goes to the constant that we expect it to go to. So by imposing a simple physical requirements, it is possible to fit this curve, and it works pretty well for, as far as I know, for all solids. So the lesson that I would like to draw from this is that in many cases, it's sufficient to know the physics at low energies. So first of all, at low energies, the physics is universal. So the sound waves propagate in all crystals more or less the same way for at low frequencies and low wave numbers. So that's just described by the wave equation. And so phonons behave the same way in all solids at small momenta. Now at large momenta, they behave differently depending on the microscopic structure. But if you impose the reasonable physical requirements, then we can extrapolate the low energy theory up to the limits where it's not even supposed to work. So the way it works here is that we just impose some limiting energy beyond which our approximation shouldn't work, and then the physical requirements allows us to set this energy cutoff to express it in terms of the parameters of the system that we want to study. So I guess I stop here, and in the next lecture we continue with field theory proper.